Good morning. I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order at 8:02 a.m. on Tuesday, February 13th. Joining me today, we have Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Tallarico, Representative Lincoln, Representative Drummond, and myself, Chair Parrish. Our staff this morning are Lori Rowland from House Records, Patrick Courtnage, my committee aide, and Madison Truitt on teleconference. We have a quorum to do business. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to silence your cell phones and other electronic devices. It has also been requested that we refrain from moving our microphones around too much, and as a chronic offender in that, I'll try to restrain myself. We have two items on the agenda today: House Bill 264, Shopping Bag Fees and Recycling, and House Joint Resolution 30, Urge U.S. Support of Refugees. We'll be starting today with House Bill 264, Shopping Bag Fees and Recycling. Anyone who's testifying on the phone, please remember to take it off of speakerphone before beginning your testimony. Representative Josephson, is there anything you'd like to say before we move to public testimony?
Yes, just a couple things. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Andy Josephson, House District 17. For the record, with me is Lisa Delaney, my staff, who's worked on this bill. The first thing is that in response to questions and other inquiries, Ms. Delaney has prepared, I think it's like a three-page Q&A document, which I think is pretty responsive. And one thing that struck me about it, and I thank her for it, is I wasn't aware of the number of local communities and small communities that have made their own efforts to ban bags or some equivalent of that. And there were many there that I was unaware of, but she'll tell me later how she found them. Those are the only sort of housekeeping things that are there. I will say that just as we said Saturday, and I thank the committee for its time, that is, that I've been before it now 2 days in a row, but I will say that my staff and I continue to believe, and as do many of the callers who called Saturday, that a ban may be the preferred route. I contacted Ledge Legal, as I said I would, and asked them the question about how far out an effective date could be, because it occurs to me that if there was a delayed effective date, say 2020 kind of thing, that it may give communities a chance to prepare and act accordingly. But it's just a thought.
And what Representative Josephson, did they tell you about the furthest date you could put it at?
I thought, through the chair, Andy Josephson, to the chair, I thought that they would just answer, but they do things by memoranda. And so they said, oh, do you want to get in the queue? And I said, yes, put me in the queue.
Very well. Thank you. Are there any questions for the bill's sponsor at this time? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. And I was exchanging emails with the bill sponsor this morning on this subject. I believe I asked a question of Ms. Delaney, but the question can be answered by whomever. I don't see answered in the written responses, which is the relative harm of plastic bags versus other types of trash or litter in Alaska, including common types of litter. And the question I want to get at is, in sense of scale and relativity, is this any more a problem than other types of common plastic or styrofoam litter? And therefore, what I'm trying to understand is, why should we be targeting this with a tax or a ban versus other types of common trash?
And I will defer to Ms. Delaney. She took that up in the memo that, or the Q&A document that she's given to your staff.
Ms. Delaney.
Hi, for the record, Lisa Delaney, through the chair. I haven't been able to find much in the way of Alaska-specific statistics. So I'm not sure I can give you an answer you're going to be satisfied with. I'm still looking around. I've called a couple of the Marine Institutes. I don't know what plastic bags cause in terms of damage relative to other plastics or other pollution in Alaska at this time.
Thank you. Comment?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I was going to say I feel like that question is important to me, at least in terms of understanding sort of the impetus for the legislation. And just anecdotally, while I recognize it's very variable and a lot of communities have acted on their own volition because they feel there's a problem locally, what I've seen, or at least in southeast coastal Alaska, is actually styrofoam is a far bigger problem, and it also disintegrates. And whenever I'm at a beach in the Outer Coast, I just sort of habitually pick up stuff, and the vast proportion of that is actually not plastic bags. And so, if we're gonna go this direction, I'm sort of interested in if we're really sort of solving the greatest harm. But appreciate the response. I guess that remains to be my biggest question.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I would say, again, I commend you to the paper that Ms. Delaney put together, because it is, I think, somewhat responsive to that issue. I think page one talks about the fact that, for example, it's the second most attractive second greatest attractant to fish and birds. After fishing gear, and talks about sort of its chemical makeup and those implications.
Seeing no further questions for the bill's sponsor, thank you. We will return to public testimony at this time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, would you like us to stay here?
No, you can go back. Thank you. I'm now reopening public testimony. Again, for anyone testifying on the phone, please take it off of speakerphone for better clarity and speak loudly and clearly. Let's see. I'll start with Patricia Cuve. Patricia, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello. Would you please introduce yourself, give your name and affiliation for the record? And you'll have 2 minutes to testify.
Thank you. So my name is Patricia Q. I'm calling from Homer. And I'm going to be reviewing the top 10 facts about plastic bags in our oceans. And this is from the Environmental Working Group out of Massachusetts. But I'm also going to refer to the Pacific Gyros as well, because we are more impacted by those Pacific gyros. So the number one fact, Americans use more than 100 billion plastic bags each year, more than 300 bags per person per year. Plastic bags are used for an average of 12 minutes, but a single plastic bag has a life expectancy of up to 1,000 years. During the 2011 International Coastal Cleanup, volunteers collected 120,450 pounds of bags in the United States. In the ocean, plastic breaks down into small plankton-sized particles that can outnumber plankton 6 to 1. These pieces collect toxins like PCBs and DDT at levels up to 1 million times the levels found in seawater. Marine wildlife often mistake plastic bags for food, especially sea turtles hunting jellyfish. In fact, high amounts of plastic material, especially plastic bags, have been found blocking the breathing passages and stomachs of many marine species, including whales, dolphins, seals, puffins, and turtles. 85% of all sea turtles will be injured or killed by plastic in their lifetimes, including the endangered leatherback turtles that summer in Massachusetts Bay. 80% of marine debris comes from land-based waste, and the most direct route to, again, this is the Great Atlantic Garbage Patch that Massachusetts is referring to, but we have 5 garbage patches in the Pacific. So retail businesses spend more than $4 billion per year to provide plastic bags. And as of this piece was written, nearly 100 cities, towns, and counties across the U.S. have banned plastic bags, half of them in the past year. I support House Bill 264. Actually, I support a total ban on the use of plastic bags. I think Alaska is capable of moving forward with this House bill. Let's go to the gyros in the
Pacific. Ms. Q, that is, exceeds your time. Would you be able to send in the rest of your remarks in written form?
Yes, I can do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Q. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony, and we'll look forward to seeing it in written form. And for anyone listening, you're always free to email in your comments at house.regional.and.community.affairs@akleg.gov. I'm sorry for the length of the email address. You can also send them to rep.justin.parrish@akleg.gov, and I'll distribute them to the members of the committee. Again, thank you, Ms. Q. Next, we're going to go to David Nies in Anchorage. Mr. Nies, are you with us?
Yes, I am. David Nies, speaking for Alaska Policy Forum. I'd like to point out that reviewing the testimony that's been recorded with the documents, you don't seem to have any testimony from the large grocery people, Fred Meyer, Carr's, Safeway. You in the state of Alaska have a preference to use local control over government control, and many of the communities in Alaska have indeed enacted local control measures. If you decide to do this, you will join Washington, D.C. as the only state that has a fee on plastic grocery bags. There are three states that ban them, but there's three times as many states that prohibit a ban on plastic bags. You also have four states that have decided that labeling plastic bags as we want to recycle them and having recycling programs is a much more effective way of having them enter the environment, or in other words, the idea is to keep them out of the environment, so encouraging recycling by requiring labeling in the states that they have used that and have actually proven more effective. So you have to choose whether or not a statewide fee or, you know, local control is what you want to decide to do. Keeping in mind that you would be in a very, very small part of the United States that has enacted a fee, Washington, D.C. being the only place. Now, there are localities that have Boulder, Colorado, Brownsville, Texas, New York, Portland, Maine, and Washington, D.C. all have fees. Everywhere else, it's either banned, three places, or prohibited to be banned. It is good to keep plastic bags out of the trees, out of the landfills, so the recycling program would be much more effective. Any cost that's incurred on this is going to be passed on to the consumers, so it will have a negative economic impact on the economy of Alaska. So thank you very much. We're not particularly in favor of this bill. We'd prefer a recycling program.
I'm sorry, sir. I missed the last two words. You'd prefer a...
We would prefer some kind of recycling program that labeled the bags, saying, you know, we encourage you to recycle and allow municipalities and boroughs to ban them at a local level rather than imposing a statewide fee.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Nies. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nies, you mentioned a couple other municipalities around the country or states that do ban them. It sounds like you've done a little bit of research. Can you express to us whether those states are moving towards a outright ban, or is a taxation a step along the way, or in your whatever research you've done, have you learned?
Well, in the research I've done, there are pending in about 17 states either a ban and or a ban. Most of them want to do a recycling program. A fee structure, charging a fee for the bag, is only proposed, as far as I can tell, in one or two states, and they seem to be mostly in large city areas like New York City, Washington, D.C. Those are the areas where, you know, you don't have much of a recycling program, and most of the people are walking people that are going to grocery stores, and they need something that's safe to carry their stuff home. So they're trying to encourage reusable bags and recycling of the plastic bags.
Thank you.
I can send you a link. NCELF has a really good link on it and goes over the whole NCSL has a really good link and goes over the whole national vote.
Thank you. Please do send that to the members of the committee. And Representative Sadler, follow up.
Thank you. And I think you meant NCSL, National Conference of State Legislatures. Is that the website you're indicating?
Yes, that has a really good comprehensive link on the state of plastic bag, bees, and fans.
Are there any further questions from the members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Neese, for your testimony.
Thank you.
I should mention that we have Emily Naumann from Ledge Legal online for any questions. Next. I am sorry, Ms. Powers, I would not be confident in pronouncing your name, but if you would please place your name and affiliation on the record, and you may give your testimony.
Hi, my name is Anamika Powers, and I live in Palmer. I'm a small business owner and a civil engineer, and I've worked for the past 25 years or so in cleaning up contaminated sites. So my main concern with plastic bags is the long-term economic and environmental impact of pollution. Even when people properly dispose of these bags, too many bags blow out of the landfill, trash bins, containers. They're very light, and they're very easily transported by water and wind, which we have an abundance of in Alaska, especially at this time of the year. My question is, who's going to clean up the pollution and who's going to pay for it? In my professional experience, it is cheaper to prevent pollution at the source than to pay for cleanup after the fact. A bag ban or fee does exactly that. It reduces pollution at the source. The World Economic Forum in 2016 predicted that at current rates of pollution, the world's oceans would contain more plastic by weight than fish by the year 2050. This impairment to the oceans and fishes could have a future economic impact to Alaskans. Protecting the salmon industry was one of the main reasons that Cordova successfully imposed a bag ban in 2016, and we haven't even begun to assess the impact to the food chains of land animals. At the Matsu Experimental Farm, plastic bags have already been found in the stomachs of caribou and moose. Alaskans rely heavily on the beauty and health of our land and waters for tourism, hunting, and fishing, and I think we should be proactive in protecting these resources. Since plastic pollution is widespread and not the sole responsibility of any one person, corporation, or nation, most cleanup costs will likely be borne by government entities, which means it will eventually be paid for by the taxpayers. That means by you and by me. And if we don't act, our kids and grandkids will bear an even larger cost, because this pollution problem is not going to go away by itself, but if we don't do anything, it will only grow. Banning or imposing a fee on these bags certainly does not eliminate all plastic pollution, but it is a very simple means of eliminating one widely used source. And it's an easy way to start, because it's something that can be controlled by the individual. I can't control how companies package their goods, but I can control how I carry them from the store to my car.
Thank you, Ms. Ms. Powers, that is your
My
time.
My household stopped using plastic grocery bags years ago, and honestly, it has not been a hardship at all. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Ms. Powers? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Powers, curious about Cordova's experience. Have you seen what have been the results of the ban on plastic bags in Cordova?
Well, I've just been in contact with one of the women from Cordova who was involved in the ban, and according to her, it's been very successful. They notice less plastic bag litter around the town. Now, they had a concerted effort to provide everyone in the town with a reusable bag so people can carry their own bags to the stores.
Follow up, Rep. Sadler?
I just want to clarify that the chain of information, so that's not your observation, that's someone else's you've heard of or been told?
Yeah, I don't live in Cordova. I live in Palmer. So we have, in Wasilla, we have, they just passed a bag ban, but that's not going to go into effect until July. So I couldn't tell you right now what the effect is.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to hear from the folks in Cordova what the impact is in Cordova.
I believe that we had a testifier from Cordova last session. I don't know that we've got a new one from Cordova this go-around, but certainly we can try to make that happen for you. Thank you, Ms. Powers, for your testimony. Seeing no further questions from the members of the committee, we're going to come back here to Juno. I'd like to invite Ms. Hart to come forward. If you would please introduce yourself, place your name and any affiliation on the record, and you may give your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I'm representing myself. I'm from Juneau. I am here testifying in support of this bill. I've traveled fairly extensively in the West Coast of the U.S. in communities before and after they've implemented the bag bans, and I've traveled globally, including China and Russia and Estonia and Finland and Switzerland this past fall, and seen that in all of those it's routine. If you want a bag, you get a thicker, reusable bag, and you pay for it. And it's very routine. People don't have any problem handling it or doing it. I saw from NFIB some concerns that the clerks would have difficulty estimating how many bags someone would need, and that seems to be the framework of their opposition. In most of the communities that I've been in, you say how many bags you want, so the customer is deciding how many bags they want to pay for and how they want to bag their goods. So I find that a really weak argument, which says that they don't have much against this ban. Seattle's had a bag ban in effect since 2012 or so. Their population, I think, is greater than the entire state of Alaska. All of the major retailers that we have here do business in Seattle, Fred Meyer, Safeway. Costco doesn't provide bags. But all of the major retailers are able to handle this. They're already doing this in other states, in other communities, in other states, as well as within communities. So I urge you to do it and then to tackle other plastic wastes that Representative Price Tompkins mentioned. There are certainly other things, but this is available. It's a low-hanging fruit to start making a change. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Are there any questions for members of the committee? Seeing none, again, thank you for your testimony. And I know that we've got a number of students in the room. If any of you wish to testify on either of the two bills before us, all you need to do is sign up on the sheet outside the door there. With that, we'll go back online to Susie Hayes. Ms. Hayes, would you please introduce yourself, place your name and affiliation on the record, and you'll have 2 minutes for testimony.
Great. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please proceed.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you for having this hearing this morning. My name is Susie Hayes. I am from Palmer, Alaska. And I am a volunteer for the Valley Community for Recycling Solutions. I'm a member of the MATSU Zero Waste Committee and the Plastic Bag Committee. I've lived and worked in the state for 30 years. I worked for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a fisheries biologist before retiring 2 years ago. I've participated in local spring cleanups, and I pick up trash whenever I walk in my neighborhood and whenever I'm recreating in the state. I enjoy hiking, fishing, berry picking. As you know, there's a litter problem across our state, and part of that is plastic bags. You've all seen plastic bags tangled in trees and fences and along the highway. You've heard testimony about this already.
What you don't see are the remnants of plastic bags that got wrapped around the branch and waved in the wind until they were shredded into pieces that you'd no longer recognize. And you don't see the plastics that blew into creeks and rivers and then traveled back to the sea. You've heard about the environmental problems that bags present. I'm also concerned about the amount of unnecessary and costly and toxic waste going into landfills. Plastic bags may be reused in the homes, but they will eventually take up space in landfills. In the valley, there are over 100,000 people in our borough, and our footprint of the landfill is growing. If additional costly cells are built, they will overtake crevice moraine trails and parkland, and this is great hiking and berry picking area. Single-use plastic bags are not necessary. There are so many good alternatives. Cloth bags, such as the ones sold by our major grocery stores, can be reused for years, and they can be easily washed and dried in the air. Paper bags are also a good alternative. They can be repurposed, recycled, and burned. Most people already own many reusable shopping bags. While giving out free reusable bags at events this year as part of the committee's efforts to get people to reuse bags, I've also been told, no thanks, I've got plenty of reusable bags already. I just need some encouragement to bring them to the store when I shop. So please listen to your constituents and construct legislation that does two things. Legislation that encourages shoppers to bring their own bags and discourage stores from distributing any free plastic bags. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hayes. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
Next, I would like to go to Mr. Squires. Mr. Squires, are you there?
Yes, I am. For the record, my name is James Squires. I live in rural Deltona. I'm a constituent of Representative George Rauscher. I'm against HB 264. I'm appalled at the seemingly unsatiable desire to increase the size, scope, footprint, and influence of government. This is a fine example of blatant government overreach, penalizing responsible members of society for the actions of irresponsible ones. From what I understand, I believe there's already a $1,000 fine on the books for littering statewide. It's certainly posted on very visible and expensive signs throughout the states. Let's work together and clean up the state one litter bug, one junkie, and one totalitarian politician at a time. Not only do I encourage the chair to put this bill in this drawer and leave it there, the primary sponsor needs to be notified to quit wasting this committee's time at the expense of Alaskans. I would like to see you folks out of there in 90 days, yet you folks have introduced well over 300 bills in the House alone. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. You get points for being succinct. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Squires? Seeing none?
Actually, yes, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Squires. What's in rural Deltona, what's your experience with plastic bags? Does the local store carry them? Do they end up in the view shed?
They do carry them, but I've got to tell you, in my cabin, all my trash cans are designed to fit those plastic bags. Everything gets recycled out here.
Thank you.
Again, thank you, Mr. Squires. Seeing no further questions from the members of the committee, we're going to move to Mr. Harrington. Mr. Harrington, are you with us? Sorry, Mr. Harrington, we can't hear you very well. Can you please hold your phone to your ear and speak loudly?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Please introduce yourself by placing your name and affiliation.
My name is William Harrington. William Harrington, H-A-R-R, and I'm in Trinity Spinard, and I'm unaffiliated. First of all, I'd like to say that it's the irresponsible use by the people who get these plastic bags from the stores that are causing the problem. Here in Spinard, we have a flower. Here in Spinard, we put out flowers on our little light poles for the tourists. At the end of the year, and I have driven by, they collect all of these when the tourists leave, and they put all those flowers into black plastic bags and put them in the truck and then take them to the dump. It seems incredibly crazy that you take an organic material like a flower and put it into a plastic bag to haul it to the dump. My point is it isn't just store bags that are causing the problem and that will cause the problem. Plastic bags are here, and if I use the store bags, I recycle the store bags as garbage bags. Who does not throw their garbage into a plastic bag of some sort in their kitchen? Good luck with all this. I'd just like to again point out that in Anchorage, we dispose of all of our flowers in plastic bags at the end of the tourist season. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington, and I wish you the best in advocating with your local government to bring it more into line with your values. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Harrington? Seeing none, thank you again, sir, for your testimony. Oh, and we also have Michelle Putz from Sitka. Michelle, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Would you please place your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, thank you for hearing me. My name is Michelle Putz. I am representing both myself and a group of concerned citizens, a volunteer group of concerned citizens called Bags for Change in Sitka. There's about 40 of us in our group and about a dozen regular volunteers along with students. You've heard many of the reasons why you should do this, and I will repeat those. I also want to let you know that I have a list of pros and cons of a fee versus a ban that I'd like to tell you about, and then also tell you a little bit about some of the things that we've been doing to try to move people towards reusable bags, as well as a couple of polls that we've recently done about this issue. Pretty simply, plastic bags are getting into our food and our bodies. There's lots of studies that are starting to show that. Toxins from plastics are affecting reproductive health in children and infants, women and men, and could affect fish health as well. Again, there are studies that are showing this. Plastics last forever in the environment and are made from petrochemicals. Plastic bags can damage and kill wildlife. They litter our communities and increase the waste we must ship south. And using less disposable bags is a sustainable behavior that is easy to choose and to change. But again, there's the importance to us is as much about health and food as anything else. But I also want to let you know that I just spoke to a woman in Sitka whose boat nearly ran into the rocks when her motor sucked up a plastic bag and overheated. So this is actually happening in our communities. This was in Sitka, just outside of our port. In terms of some of the things that we've been doing, we are working on trying to pass a fee ourselves that would help to pay for schools and to help reduce our electric rates. Some of the things that we've been doing beyond working on the legislation, we did a reusable bag roundup and a reusable bag giveaway. We also did a poster contest where we're getting out posters trying to help people remember to bring their reusable bags. Some of the pros of a fee is that a fee is more likely to have an impact on reduction because it incentivizes behavior change and forces customers to make a conscious decision to purchase a bag. And there is I have some references for that. I think it also gives people a choice. And when we told people in this poll, one of the options was, I'm just going to read you the poll question. In Sitka, should single-use disposable plastic bags be A, banned, B, provided but for a fee that would be used to support Sitka schools and to reduce residents' electric costs, C, handed out for free, or D, no opinion, that supporting Sitka schools and reducing electric costs was very helpful. Admittedly, we don't have the results. We just did this on Saturday at the grocery stores where we asked every customer at every single grocery store, not every customer, every customer we could stop these questions, and we hope to have the results within the next couple of weeks. We also did an informal poll on Sitka Chatters, a Facebook page, which I will say is probably not representative of the progressive side of this community, and the results on that were 195 people saying take no action, 225 saying take action on bags, whether it was a ban or a fee. And then I do want to also make sure you recognize that I would really like it that if you pass a fee, that you take out on page 4, line 1, number 2, operates year-round. I think that whether a business is working year-round or not, they need to be paying the fees. I think our visitors should be helping to pay for the costs of the things that we do in our communities. So I think that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Butz. Would you please be so good as to send to the committee any succinct information you might have about the health impacts on humans of plastic bags in the food chain?
Sure.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Butz, for your testimony.
Thank you.
And that's everyone we have signed up online and in the room. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify on this? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. House Bill 264 will be held over to our next meeting, which will be Saturday at 10 a.m. At that point, we'll entertain amendments and learn the will of the committee. Amendments must be submitted to my office by 2 p.m. on Friday. With that, we'll move on to the
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Just a brief question. We meet a couple days a week. The urgency of meeting on Saturday, is that going to be a regular feature of the committee's schedule?
Pending the end of the subcommittee process, which has consumed, I believe at this point, a little bit more than half of our scheduled meeting times, I think it's valuable to continue meeting on Saturdays, provided that doesn't pose an undue burden upon the members of the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we are meeting in our subcommittees, which is an additional work burden, so having extra meetings in the weekend does not ameliorate, but it exacerbates the time crunch.
The work before the committee must be performed. I'd be happy to meet with you at some future point to discuss it at greater length.
Certainly, but we'll look forward to that.
Thank you. With that, we're going to move on to House Joint Resolution 30. Would the joint resolution sponsor of HJ 30, Representative Josephson, and his staffer, Lisa Delaney, please come to the testifier table? Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Josephson. I represent House District 17 in Anchorage. I will be brief, and then I would ask if the chair will hear the testimony of an invited person who's flown here and was critical in inspiring the resolution to present some testimony. So, Mr. Chair, as you know, the source for legislation for individual legislators is as wide as one might imagine. So it comes from all sorts of stakeholders, advocacy groups, citizens, the government itself, when agencies ask us to sponsor or address certain issues. And a number of us have gotten emails from folks. I have a bill this Thursday in House Finance Committee the catalyst for it came from a citizen who had a workers' comp issue. In the following context before us, House Joint Resolution number 30, although this is an issue I have an interest in, Ms. Gabby Weiss, who's sitting behind me and is an eighth grader at Colony High School, I guess it must be Colony Middle School, in the Palmer area, asked to meet with me last fall. She met with Lisa and myself. That is Ms. Delaney, who's sitting with me, of my staff. And she's here with her mother, Melissa Kimberling. they've flown down from Anchorage, and having met with her for, we met for at least an hour in the LIO in Anchorage, I thought that this was, that this warranted at least some of the committee's time and some of the legislature's time. So, in essence, this resolution is designed to encourage the federal government, because they're the deciders, quote unquote, although they're influenced by us, and that's why we have this before us, to do what it can, that is, for the federal government to do what it can and its share of carrying the burden for displaced people who are displaced because of civil war, they're displaced because of genocide, they're displaced because of other other harms within their nations, that isn't well put, but basically humanitarian crises that occur within their nations. And those result in sexual violence, human trafficking, persecution based on religion or nationality, forced conscription, genocide or exploitation. I think these are things that we could take notice of and that are basically indisputable. There really isn't any dispute about the nature of the humanitarian crises. The dispute is about what the federal role should be. That's a more honest dispute, not that the other one isn't honest. I'm just saying that the facts are pretty well understood. We know that they are more severe than they've been historically. Part of that is based on the sheer number of people in the world at this point. We know that Europe, broadly speaking, has had its own debates about what to do about civil war and humanitarian crises and refugee crises. And we know generally that Europeans have responded in a, I think, helpful way. And so this resolution asks that the recipients of it contribute as well and direct our government to contribute as well. And I think also historically it's important for the legislature, when future generations look back on what the legislature did, to say we took note of important moments in time, and as a consequence, this resolution would reflect that moving forward. So that's the essence of this. I can tell you, Mr. Chairman, that I reviewed the data in this. Legislative Legal reviewed the data. The data is hard to always fix perfectly because it's a moving target depending on the status of a civil war or a refugee crisis. But I confirmed that this information was largely accurate, certainly within a span of accuracy, and grounded, I think, in fact. And some of that comes from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Ms. Weiss, again, who's sitting behind me and would be testifying in support of the resolution, found her own set of data, and she could tell you about that. And I think she'll report that it corroborates what's in the resolution. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for the bill's sponsor?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Josephson, there is a philosophical question raised by your resolution, sir, about the federal government's obligation to address world problems. I'd note that your resolution speaks on page 1, line 19, 11 of 40,300,000 internally displaced people. Mm-hmm. These are people not transnational borders, but who are within their own country. Who are we in the United States to establish where people should be inside the borders of their own countries?
Through the chair, your point is well taken in that certainly there are circumstances where the United States has intervened to impact what's going on domestically. I mean, the invasion of France on June 6, 1944 was an example of that. But I think what this is really illustrating is that you see the refugees as a byproduct of internally displaced people. So the latter, it correlates with the former. when people are persecuted within, they leave within and move without. And so I think that's what that number comes from.
Follow-up, Rep. Sattler?
It's an awkward line of questions to raise because certainly I nor anybody else in this committee or the legislature or probably the federal government supports people having to leave their home and be displaced and be disrupted. The world has always been a nasty place, and there are wars, there's famine, there's pestilence, and people will try and escape that with their feet. But I'm curious to know, what is the U.S. federal government's obligation? The United States has its own interests. After World War II, we helped deal with the displaced people, the DP crisis, because we wanted to make sure to provide stability in Europe, which is one of our biggest trade partners and an important part of global civilization. But you've listed the massive numbers of people around the world, including South Sudan, our newest country, and I just wonder, to what degree does the United States have to take care of the rest of the world? I think it's been argued, the old argument is the United States the world's policeman? How far do our political interests extend?
I'm Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I think that that there's a sharing of the duty, and there's a feeling in Europe and amongst many Americans that we're not doing our share, that there was a system in place that scrutinized refugees who might come to this country in a way that was protective of those of us who live in the country, and that we have toughened those standards in a way that is harmful to the world community. And as a consequence, we haven't done our share of dealing with displaced persons crises. And that we've asked for Europeans largely and some countries like Jordan to bear that burden. So this is principally designed to say, as a matter of principle, the Alaska legislature is sympathetic and believes that we have the resources and the power and the moral courage to do our share and be cognizant of the breadth of the problem.
Follow up, Mr.
Chairman. I'm engaging to some degree in Socratic dialogue. I noticed the interest by members of the public, many young people, so I'm kind of trying to illustrate the questions that we have to consider in these kinds of resolutions, so I hope you'll bear with me.
Sure.
I hear you say, Mr. Sponsor, Mr. Representative, that Europe may feel that the United States is not doing our share. We don't adhere to or ascribe to or follow the feelings or directions of other countries necessarily. The United States is probably the most internationalist country in the globe, and we've been involved with the United Nations, we're involved in AID, we do an awful lot of foreign aid and so forth, so I would say offhand that the United States is doing an awful lot for refugees. You said that our refugee policy is protective of our citizens but tougher on the world community. I would posit, sir, that that is an appropriate function of our federal government of the United States to take care primarily of our U.S. citizens. And not that we don't have a heart, but we are one country in the world, and it's appropriate that our government consider the benefits of our current residents over those of potential residents. And I guess when I get to, what's the ultimate? I mean, if the entire world were under one government and we could thereby control the flow of refugees, that might be one solution. I think you would agree with me that most everybody wants to go to America. We're the land of opportunity. We're the land of freedom. We're a very wealthy nation. Does our obligation to the world community involve allowing everyone to join the United States?
Through the chair, Representative Sattler, I take your point, and because you talked about the interests of young people in this discussion, you're right that as a history teacher and degreed person, this is a current that runs through American history, particularly in the 20th century, 19th century as well, and it sort of ebbs and flows. We were isolationists. 1916, Woodrow Wilson ran against helping Europe with its war problem. He then entered us into war within 2 years. So you can see how those things can change quickly. Roosevelt, I think, would have liked to get us into World War II faster. The country wasn't interested. But then the problem came to us anyway. And I think that's part of why I like this resolution, because it's very hard to lock yourself away and not participate in these problems when they're headed your way in any case. I don't think what's called for by the resolution is necessarily that we would house and care for a certain number of refugees, but simply that we would recognize that the crisis is there and that we're sensitive and sympathetic to it, and that we play some role or should play some role in helping solve it. And so I think that's principally where it goes. And I would note for the committee's interest that resolutions are frequently written like this. They're aspirational. They don't necessarily have concrete examples of we will now do X, Y, and Z. And in that respect, this resolution is like many others.
Fair enough. Last follow-up? Thank you. I appreciate the dialogue, Mr. Sponsor. I would just note that the United States government does participate heavily in the United Nations. I think we're the largest funder of that organization, whose mission is just this kind of international and intranational global refugee amelioration, as is demonstrated by your citing the UN High Commissioner on Refugees. So I think there is a venue and a mechanism for the United States to address global refugee and displaced peoples, and that would be the United Nations. And I think we're doing a fairly good job of doing that now. But I appreciate the dialogue and appreciate your warm thoughts for the refugee crisis, and I look forward to the continuing discussion of the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? Seeing none? Sir, if you'd like to... Excellent. We'll take your testimony after Ms. Weiss and the other gentleman who's already signed up, and we'll get you added to the list here. Thank you. And thank you, Representative Josephson. Ms. Weiss, would you please come forward? You can have a seat and adjust the microphone however works best for you, okay? So, Ms. Weiss, please state your name and any affiliation for the record. And at the request of the bill's sponsors, I'm going to be treating you as invited testimony, which, broadly speaking, means that I won't interrupt you. Thank so you may proceed with your testimony.
So I'm unaffiliated, and my name is Gabby Weiss. So good morning. My name is Gabby Weiss, and I'm from Palmer, Alaska. I've come here today to explain the importance of House Joint Resolution Number 30. First off, a brief recap of the magnitude of the refugee crisis and refugees in general. According to the Oxford Dictionary, a refugee is defined as a person who has been forced to leave their country in order to escape war, persecution, or natural disaster. That is all a refugee is. Just from the definition, it is known that the term refugee means a person, someone who is as human as you and me, who is fleeing their country because it isn't safe. I think that sometimes we people get caught up on the labels. Because we are referring to the people who are fleeing from violence, as this new population, the refugees, there is this barrier that is put up that makes us humans feel like we are somehow very different from each other. It is very intangible for us to grasp what refugees are going through, because right now we are inside, dry and warm, fed and watered, safe and sound. But there are men, women, and children who are fleeing from war, persecution, and natural disasters right now. And it isn't just like hundreds of people or thousands of people, and it's not even just a million people. No. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, it is 22.5 million people. That means that if you take the population of Alaska and multiply it by 30, the number is still less than all the refugees in the world. And guess how many of that number of refugees are children? Is it a tenth? A fifth? A third? No. More than one half of those 22.5 million people are children under the age of 18. They didn't choose to be born into unsafe areas. Although that is a huge number of people, you have the power to make a difference. If the U.S. resettles refugees, provides humanitarian assistance, and encourages others to do the same, imagine how many lives could be changed. One other major benefit is, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, an adult refugee will generally pay $21,000 more in taxes than they will receive in benefits in their first 20 years in the United States. So, why aren't we doing this already? A common thought preventing Americans from welcoming refugees is the idea that refugees are terrorists. However, the U.S. Department of State explains the rigorous vetting process takes up to 24 months and deters those with violent intentions. This has been shown in practice because, according to the Migration Policy Institute, during 14 years, only 3 out of the 784,000 refugees have been arrested for planning terrorist activities, and it is worth noting 2 were not planning an attack in the United States, and the plans of the third were barely credible. Because we're the lucky ones who get to have meetings and eat lunch and spend time with our friends and family, we need to take it upon ourselves to care for the other humans who aren't as lucky as us. The last reason we should help is because these people, these refugees, need our help. The refugee crisis has created horrible situations for all refugees. Families become split apart and lives become put on hold. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, there are 3.5 million refugee children who should be in school, like me, but aren't. Also, rates sometimes as high as 86% project post-traumatic stress disorder in refugees, according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Lastly, according to the Mercy Corps organization, one half of Syria's population before the war, that is 11 million plus people, have been killed or forced to abandon their homes due to the Syrian conflict. It is our duty because if we were running away from violence and persecution and natural disasters, we would want others to stand up and support us. It is that simple. Please vote for House Joint Resolution Number 30. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for our testifier? I suppose I have one, and I'll defer to Rep. Sadler.
I would just, Mr. Chairman, for Ms. Weiss, not a question but a comment. That was very well written, very well presented. You're to be commended on your locution skills.
Thank you.
Yes, I quite agree. I think you gave an excellent presentation. It's interesting what you articulate here as our. Would you say moral duty? I'm sorry, I shouldn't put words into your mouth, but why do you think we have this responsibility?
I think partially it's moral, like, because if we were in that situation, if we were fleeing, we would want people to stand up and help us. I think that's the main reason, just because I feel that that's the right thing to do, and we're all humans, so just stand up for other humans.
You've done an excellent job articulating the golden rule there.
Thank you.
So, thank you again, Ms. Weiss. And seeing no further questions from the members of the committee, we'll move on to the next testifier in line. The next to sign up is Mr. Nick Steen. Mr. Steen, are you with us?
I am, sir.
Mr. Steen, would you please place your name and affiliation on the record and begin your testimony?
My name is Nick Steen. I'm representing myself. I live in the Valley and have in Alaska at least for 50-some years. And I thank you for affording me this opportunity to voice my objection to the resolution number 30. The state of Alaska has no justification to interject itself into the international refugee problem. International relations are reserved for the federal government. We have elected representatives in Washington, D.C. responsible for reflecting our views on these matters. Alaska has a multitude of problems not being solved by our elected officials. These include crime, education, deteriorating roads, deteriorating infrastructure, and the excessive spending depleting our savings accounts. I have yet to speak to anyone within my circle of friends that supports this resolution, and I encourage you not to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Steen, for your testimony. And bonus points for being succinct. Are there any questions for Mr. Steen from the members of the committee? Seeing none, we will go to Mr. Robert Fawcett here in the room with us. Mr. Fawcett, would you please come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record, and give your testimony.
My name is Robert Fawcett, and I'm just represent myself, a concerned citizen. I do believe that we should help as much as we can. But my question is, with our debt and with, you know, our citizens who do struggle, you know, day to day, who would be responsible for paying for or providing training, you know, the education, placement of the refugees? You know, I do believe we should help, but, you know, who would be responsible for taking them on, you know, financially, physically, housing, with all of the stuff that, you know, our government struggles with? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fawcett. And if I, Mr. Fawcett, well, I can ask you later. It's a personal question. So are there, I'd like to ask if there's anyone else in the room who'd like to testify on this? Please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Charles Duncan. I'm from CAKE as well. And I'm just here to say that we should take care of ourselves before we bring in any refugees. I'm not worried about terrorists. I'm more worried that we aren't financially or mentally prepared for taking on as many refugees as we want. We do have a duty to help, but we also have a duty to take care of ourselves. And taking care of yourself should be more important than taking care of other people. I know that sounds, it doesn't sound right, but it's true. We should focus on our debt, our housing, and when we get to the point where we can help other people, that's when we should. That's all I really had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Duncan? Seeing none, thank you again, sir, for your testimony. Please come forward, Ms. Weiss. Place your name and any affiliation on the record, and you may give your testimony.
My name is Melissa Kemberling, and I am from Palmer, Alaska, and I'm unaffiliated. So what I keep hearing as far as the testimony is that it sounds like it's an either-or solution, and I really don't think it is an either-or solution. I think that we can take care of ourselves as a country, but we can also work with other countries to be a leader, which we have been viewed as a leader for, you know, many years, and just that has an impact. And we can be a leader to try and bring other countries to the table to try and solve this problem and work together and co-fund. I do a lot of work in the community in Mat-Su, and that is how we work. We never venture out on our own to just solve the problem. You always work with other country or with other organizations and funders and so forth. And I don't see this problem as any different. We can totally take care of ourselves, but we can also try and create a solution to this issue. We don't have to be isolationists. It's not an either or.
Thank you, Ms. Kemberling, was it?
Yes.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Ms. Kemberling? Seeing none, thank you, ma'am, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the committee who would like to, I'm sorry, anyone else in the room who would like to testify at this time? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. House Joint Resolution 30 will be held over to a future meeting. That was the final item on the agenda. Again, the next meeting will be Saturday, February 17th at 10 a.m. Amendments are due Friday, February 16th, by 2 p.m. and can be delivered to my staff, Patrick Cortnish. This meeting is adjourned at 9:06 a.m.